State Farm Insurance knows that understanding and investing in our cultural identity is paramount in protecting our future. We know what it's like to go from nothing to something, to wish that we had better financial literacy when we were younger. Luckily, State Farm is here to help with funding programs like Project Ready, which is committed to education achievement and has already awarded over $11 million in scholarship offers to Black and Brown youth since 2021. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Hey, everyone. It's our favorite time of the year here at The Black Effect. We're heading to Atlanta for the 2024 Black Effect Podcast Festival, and we're not going alone. Nissan is back as our partner, and they're continuing their Pitch Your Podcast Lounge at the festival, where you'll have the opportunity to pitch your podcast idea live and share it with the Black Effect team. So get those podcast ideas ready. And remember, you can count on Nissan to dial up the thrill in your adventures, no matter where life takes you. Visit blackeffect.com/podcastfestival for more details.
AT&T connects an ode to podcast. Connect the alarm, change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze, 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower, lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work and traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
That's how we own it.
What's up, family? I'm your girl, Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of Street Politicians, the place where the streets and politics meet.
What's up?
Yet another episode of Street Politicians. I'm proud of us. Proud
of
us. Doing what we're supposed to be doing.
Number one podcast.
Bringing people good information.
That's right.
So every week, we've been trying to really bring some real thought out topics to people, and I've been getting the feedback from folks, seeing them out at events and in different spaces.
This is my favorite podcast. You like, know how many times I'm
hearing
that?
Lord.
We got people. Listen, number one, we got to speak it into existence. The number one podcast in the world.
It is.
You know,
it's informative.
Number one
in our
it's fun.
Hearts.
We fight.
I tell y'all,
we disagree.
We do everything. Number one in our hearts, but it's
and
certainly
on the charts.
Rising.
It's coming to the charts.
On the charts, and you know, and I'm really proud of it because I know how we started. It was a dope idea that I was resisting because I don't like being on camera on a regular basis. I love my new thing that I've been doing, my Facebook audio things. And I just sit there wherever I can have my bonnet on. I can, not have my face beat. I can just do me.
Just talk.
And run it. Because
I know how to run my mouth.
Part.
We could have had the first podcast. We could have been like the entrepreneurs of podcasts if you would have listened to me about 3-4 years ago. I said,
you did.
Yeah.
You said. Know. And I said,
everybody
no.
wants to do it. I said, look, let's go do it. He's like, no.
Because you wanted me to go to a studio that's in Delaware on the other side of town. And then we met Cat Trigg and the entire Catscape team. And then we found a median of a place that we could go.
Yep.
Okay.
We did.
There
Shout
you
out
go.
To the whole Catscape
so
team.
Let's just be clear. It is good to still be in the space. And look, even our picture changed.
Oh.
Look, that was
you see it.
That's our new picture. Anyway, so lots to talk about today. We're focusing on our brother, Donte Mitchell, that I'm really so excited. Like, I'm
Mitchell
smiling.
Brothers. We got two Mitchells.
Have two Mitchells today. And I'm really, really excited for Donte. Like, I'm so excited. He's so smart.
Very smart kid, man. That's what really started our connection, man. I just seen him, and then he reached out to me. We started talking, and just hearing his energy, hearing how articulate he was,
yes,
just knowing
man.
That he was going to come into society and immediately be a change maker, man. So it's going to be a dope interview with him.
And it's like one of those stories that it actually worked. The advocacy of everybody putting his name out into the world gave the former governor, Andrew Cuomo, I forgot his name, gave him, and his whoever works on his clemency packages, they were able to get the information. The awareness was there because he was advocating inside the walls, mm-hmm. but people outside were calling his name, sharing his story. And so that's how you get on the list, right? You gotta, it's not, they don't just go scouring through everybody that's in prison and say, oh, you. No, it's usually people's voices are being raised about exactly. a particular person. Folks are writing.
People are adding you on Instagram. And, advocating. You know, a lot of these, you know, a lot of these government officials have Instagram. They have Facebook.
Yeah, they have people that scour the net.
Exactly. So when you adding them and they say, let me go see what somebody's talking about, you know, and you continuously see that, then you realize that the voice of the people wants this.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I tell people, man. We got to utilize our voices. And this is one of those very rare instances where we actually seen the justice. You know, we seen something come from our voice. A lot of times we get deterred and we get jaded and we get tired because there's so many setbacks and not a lot of wins. So right. this is a win for
it's
us.
It's a big win. 24 years, this young man sat inside of a prison, but he really fought for himself. So shout out to Dante. He's going to be up soon. Yep. And then, like you said, it's the two Mitchells because we also going to hear from our change maker today. But I'm not going to spoil it and tell people who it is. I'm just excited that my bro is coming up. Yep. So let's see. There's a lot of stuff happening. The whole world is bugging, as mm-hmm. always. That's first of all, the COVID pandemic. Nobody knows what to do. So that's just let's just get that out there. That regardless of whether you're vaccinated, unvaccinated, in New York, if you can go to a restaurant, you can't go to a restaurant, this pandemic is still a major crisis. Mm-hmm. And how we're going to get our hands around it, God only knows. And so I just, you know, there are people who are still dying. Over the last 2 weeks, I've been hearing about a number of individuals who have passed away who are close to folks that I know. So these are like not distant stories that I just saw on the news, but people who've actually died. And just, you know, also for folks who are listening today, if you've had COVID and since it went away, you haven't been to the doctor to get yourself checked, just to, you know, get your regular checkup, you should. Because there are people who we are now finding out that a year later, months later, some of the symptoms or other conditions are popping up and people are experiencing other things that are as a result of them having COVID. So it's really something that you've got to take seriously. And as the guy on Instagram says, wear your mask, wear your mask. But you still tell us all the time, get some fresh air also.
Please get you some fresh air, man. We just have to be, just use common sense. You know, with anything that you do, I don't advocate for anything. I don't tell you what to do, what not to do, but just use common sense.
You do advocate for anything.
No, I mean, I don't advocate any way or another. So, you know, this is new to us. COVID is very new to us. And I think we just need to be getting checkups on the regular. Like as we get older and you in your 40s and late 30s and 40s, like go get checked up. If something don't feel right, don't sit there and say, oh, I can fight it off. You're not a kid no more. Your immune system is not strong as it was. It's a lot of things you're just not fighting off on your own, especially as black men. Black men have a problem with going to the doctor.
That's got to be a show. That's a show. Actually, the production team has been talking about doing a show on why Black men don't get the type of care that they need.
A lot of us don't trust. We just don't trust.
But they get plastic surgery.
I don't know who they are.
We heard about that a couple weeks ago.
I don't know.
They get their stomachs laid down. Dr. Michael Jones told us that they get it sucked out. They get their eyelids
God bless
straight.
Him. To each his own, man. If you need, get you a little.
Do what you got to
do. Do what you feel is best for you, man.
And then in other news, I think that Joe Manchin, the senator from Virginia, who is a Democrat, supposedly he identifies as a Democrat. I think he's the president. I really think that Joe Manchin runs this country. And you know, that's a thing. Like if you watch these movies that are about politics and, you know, these shows that kind of give you a like, it's like, you know, where they're acting out being president or being an administration, running stuff. These shows always have people who are within the ranks, whether they be another elected official or a staff member or just a rich person, a particularly a rich white man, where they have more power than the president. And to me, Joe Manchin is the president. He gets to decide because he is, in many ways, if you don't have his support, you can't use the majority power within the Senate. That's how narrow the numbers are in terms of having the ability to vote in a bill against the Republicans. You need Joe Manchin's vote. And he sides pretty much with the Republicans on a lot of issues. He at least has very, very conservative views and has been very, very clear that if he is not able to get, or if they, or the Democrats, are not able to get Republicans who ain't with us, have not been with us, have actually been harmful to everything we attempt to get done, that he won't vote for the bill. He wants the Republicans. So he basically is saying, let's give them what they need. So before we can sign bills. And one of the things that right now is happening, which, you know, it's been the last several weeks, so, you know, hopefully this thing will get worked out really soon, is the infrastructure bill, which is I think it's 3.4. I know it's more than $3 trillion that's needed to deal with the number of things in our society, including making sure people get back to work, infrastructure stuff, like real infrastructure issues, bridges and tunnels, things that hadn't been taken care of because of the pandemic. And there's $5.3 billion in that bill for gun violence intervention and prevention, right? And so what do you mean you're not? I don't understand what he means he's not going to sign the bill.
He means he's not going to sign the bill.
Yeah, that's what he said.
So the bottom line is, we've just been hoodwinked, man. And the government is like kangaroo court. Hmm. It's like a kangaroo court, right? So we go and we put all of this energy into voting for these people. And then they got, you know, they got these secret agents, double agents that's on our side. And when it's our turn to actually get a vote, they come out and say, no, I'm not with that. But whenever it's the Republican situation, they never side with us. There's no Republican that say, you know what? I'm holding up the Republicans because I need the Democrats.
Well, that's not true. There's like one person, which is Liz Cheney, Representative Liz Cheney. She has stood up to Donald Trump and particularly been fighting against this lie that the election was stolen from him. But you're right. Well, nobody.
Yeah, I haven't seen them step up and say, we're not passing these bills that y'all want
to
pass.
Well, I mean, she has been one to advocate or to fight against things that she thinks is wrong. But it's just one lady. Really, there's not many of them. Now, and sometimes, you know, I watch them. Sometimes you'll see different senators and particularly congressional members saying like, I think we're going too far. You know, we won't vote for these bills. There needs to be some negotiations around changing the terms. But it's never really in favor of Black communities. So to your point, you don't see Republicans stepping out of line to say, I want to protect Black people. But you always
see the issues that are important to
them. Or marginalized communities.
Yep.
But you do see Democrats who, even if it hurts marginalized communities, they are willing to side with the Republicans and others just to say, oh, you know, we're working together. You see Democrats who are like, well, we don't need qualified immunity included in the bill, knowing that that's one of those things main that thing. If we end qualified immunity, we could actually make officers feel more accountable, which might make them even more conscious about how they address and operate within our communities. Facts. And of course, the reason why they don't want to end qualified immunity, that's why they're fighting that one, because they know that's one of the most important pieces of the bill.
Facts.
So, we'll see Democrats line up and say, well, you know, maybe we'll just take that off the table so we could get something done. So, you know, you're right. It's all a bunch of bullshit. I just think that Joe Manchin, I want the kind of power that Joe Manchin has. I got to figure out how to make that happen in my life.
He's definitely leveraged his position.
He's leveraged. Yeah, he knows he's got that vote. He knows that his vote is important in order for anything to pass. So yeah. He feels like his community, West Virginians.
Do we get can we get rid of him?
Well, that's what I was getting ready to get into.
Let's get to it.
West Virginians. Right. They that particular his constituents, they're more conservative people who vote Democrat. So they're looking for almost Republican. And that's why they claim
almost Republican.
Yeah, that's why they claim that he takes the types of stances that he takes because
his constituents
will not vote him in. And so then the Democrats will say, well, we don't want to lose the seat 100% because there has been other things that Joe Manchin has voted on in favor of the Democrats and you know, in favor of some of the issues that we care about. So he hasn't been all the way, I won't say bad, but he hasn't been all the way against the Democrats either. Okay. So he fluctuates and fluffs his way through.
It just seems like he's been fluctuating a lot more towards issues
today,
that we don't need, you know.
And it's dangerous. It's very dangerous.
Extremely
and
dangerous.
And I think, you know, that advocates like yourself need to go into West Virginia and help West Virginians who don't agree with him to figure out a strategy to get him out. But only way you get those types of people out is you got to vote them out. So I was thinking. I was watching a few weeks ago the Met Gala, right? And I was thinking we should do a show on fashion, right? But from the perspective of like trends and I guess we could do a lot of different things about fashion. But I would like to talk to people like June Ambrose and other big designers about how they make these decisions on what people are going to wear and what the themes are at these events. Because at the Met Gala, I was a little stunned, if you will, by some of what I saw. I really saw a lot of mess. Like, a lot of people look messy to me.
I don't, you know, this is not my section. This is your section.
Well, but you had an opinion about a few people.
Yeah, it's, you know, I'm confused with fashion these days. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know what it's designed to do. I don't know if it's just pure shock value, you know, or what is the whole theme of it. Like, we were just having a conversation and, you know, I seen Russell Westbrook. You know, and this kilt thing. And I'm trying to get to what the fascist, like, why is every time that a man decides to wear kilt, there's this big fashion statement and celebration of it? Like, what is that actually, what does it signify in the fashion world? What is it actually?
Well, like? I mean, well, first of all, the history of kilts in general that I also am noticing a lot of people are not aware of is that men wore kilts all throughout, first of all, have been wearing kilts all throughout history, right? And I get your point. It's like, okay, if a man wears a kilt, it seems to be so like exciting to a lot of folks. But I think if you see a man in a banging suit and he's super sexy, that is celebrated as well. Because you see men post like the best picture and everybody's like, oh my God, look how good he looks.
I don't really see that.
I see it all. Well, maybe because you're not looking for it. And it's also what might be, like you see it and it's like, why is everybody on my, well, but
men
know.
Wear
I mean,
suits all the time. When last time you seen somebody who wore a suit?
It's just a suit, Mice, mm-hmm. I think people, fashion moves because it is all publicized, right? Mm-hmm. Jay-Z takes off the jerseys, puts on a different type of shirt, it moves. Everybody sees it, it gets shared. Now everybody's wearing these types of shirts. Mm-hmm. You say integrity over income, you put that hat on the internet, the next thing you know, everybody, people are buying it from you. They're sharing it. I think fashion moves in general. And I also think that there is an element, we can't deny that there's a gender conversation that comes up. And so it becomes something more to be discussed because people are like, you know, what does this mean? And what's the agenda? And all these different things that those conversations constantly come up. I think if people just let people do whatever the hell and wear whatever the hell they want to wear, it doesn't have to be that much. I mean, of a I don't conversation. Think
you can't stop people from wearing what they want to wear, right? So, but when you wear when you do anything, you're subject to someone else's opinion.
Of course,
and that's just part of life. So for me, you know, I don't. Everybody should be able and willing to do whatever, wear whatever you want to wear. I'm really just trying to figure out the fascination with the kilt. Like
I think it's just a resurgence of fashion. So the bell bottoms come back every now and then, wide leg pants, the, you know, whatever. It's there's a resurgence of that. And simple, it's another example is like Chloe Bailey comes out, it's tight, it's short, it's sexy, and everybody's going crazy. Lizzo walks out, she's half naked with her body, and you know, her being an oversized woman. Hey, everybody's talking about it. I think it's just people just, you know, people are attracted to different. They want to see something different. They want to see something that makes them feel like seen, right? Because I, as a man or a woman or whatever, they might be like, okay, I don't like to dress with the norm of exactly what they say I'm supposed to wear because that's what makes me a man or a woman. So I'm going to put this other thing on that will, like you said, provide some shock value, show that I'm different. I'm not like everybody else. And yet I'm still whoever I am. But that's a good conversation and we should talk about that. But I'm trying to figure out why people wear such ugly clothes. Now, see, that's a different whole conversation. Because there was some stuff that I saw on that red carpet that I couldn't believe it.
It's the same thing, though. Because, right, when you look at how ugly it is or in your perception of ugly, right, it makes people talk. It's for shock value. I'm different. I can wear the least attractive thing and get attention in it, right? I think that's what it's coming
from. Some of them people ain't getting no attention today.
No, a lot of people got so much negative attention, and they've got the attention, so regardless of what people are like, what the hell is this? Somebody's talking about it. And I think we've come to a stage in our culture where that is a marketing strategy, right? To go so far left, to go so far disaccording to whatever normalized as acceptable or looks like beauty or whatever, is just to go so far from that people talk about you.
Well, hey, look how Prince used to dress. Like, that was big conversation. Prince came out, he had multiple things going on in one look. You know, Michael Jackson, the same thing. Like, I guess there's always been that fashion forward mindset that, you know, I could be different. But I want to talk to the experts, like, first of all, June Ambrose at the Met Gala, if you have not, you should go to her page and check out, you know, what she wore. She looked amazing, okay? Mary J. Blige, amazing. Little Baby, fabulous. Meg Thee Stallion, fabulous. And these are also people, Ciara, amazing. And I could go on, but these are also people that we know them well enough to know that they just, like, classic looks. I don't know what the theme was. I don't know where people was going, but I saw some stuff that was, whew.
It's very different.
It was very different.
Very different.
So you know, that's what I was thinking about. I don't understand
ASAP Rocky and Rihanna. Like, I looked at it and I didn't know, what was he wearing, a quilt? Was she wearing, like, what
I think exactly? They said it was Balenciaga.
I don't care what the name. I'm talking about what it was.
Well, the theme was supposed to be something about American, like old American classics. So that's why Ciara had on a football jersey, because that's an American classic. Yeah.
What did ASAP Rocky?
That's why we have to invite people like June Ambrose can explain, because they know.
Because we don't know.
Because while she may have had. While June's look may have been very, you know, beautiful, classic look, I'm sure she dressed some of those other people, and she can explain, her and others, why, and other stylists can explain the difference. I don't know. Even our stylists. We need to ask Vlad and Mia.
We need some answers because we got some questions.
That's right.
Seeing our communities grow and thrive is something we care deeply about here at Black Tech Green Money. State Farm Insurance also cares about the growth of Black communities. They're actively investing in programs and initiatives that help provide financial literacy, give early career advice, and grow Black-owned businesses, thus leading to generational wealth, which helps protect the future of our communities. We want to build a future that we all can be proud of. State Farm understands that representation alone doesn't equate to authenticity. It also requires active sponsorship of programs like the AXO, a year-long program that recognizes and rewards high school students for their academic and cultural achievements, along with funding programs like Project Ready, a national Urban League program committed to educational achievement of Black and brown youth that has awarded over $11 million in scholarship offers to date. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities and can have a long-lasting impact. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Hey, everyone. I am so excited. The Black Effect is live. This April 27th, the 2024 Black Effect Podcast Festival is headed to Atlanta's very own Pullman Yards. Last year was incredible, and this year will be even more thrilling, especially with Nissan coming back along for the ride. Nissan is returning with some empowering activations to support Black excellence in the STEAM fields. Have a podcast idea you've been eager to share with the culture? Well, Nissan is back with a Pitch Your Podcast Lounge. You'll have the chance to record your podcast idea and have it shared with a Black Effect Podcast Network team. But that's not all. Nissan is taking the stage to spotlight some of the HBCU scholars from their own Thrill of Possibility Summit, Nissan's action-packed weekend of community building, mentorship, and professional development for HBCU scholars pursuing professions in STEAM. The Black Effect Podcast Festival is the event to be at. You won't want to miss this because no matter where life takes you, Nissan will dial up the thrill of your adventures. Visit blackeffect.com/podcastfestival for more details.
Opportunity is not equally distributed. To every Black entrepreneur listening, I want to make sure you have the tools and resources you need to grab your next opportunity. That's why I'm telling you about the 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative. The 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative is an award-winning program created by Shopify and Operation Hope. They're on a mission to start, grow, and scale 1 million Black businesses by 2030, driving wealth creation for the Black community. Out of 6 million employer-owned businesses in the U.S., only 2.3% have Black ownership. This program gives Black entrepreneurs tools and resources to level the playing field, from free business coaching to tailored training, and an extended free Shopify trial. Shopify's made a 10-year, multi-million dollar commitment to the program, and it's working. The initiative already started, supported, and engaged with over 334,000 Black businesses, helping them operate businesses that sell anything from skateboards to coffee beans to apparel. Business owners love this program. Simone Harvin, founder of SC Creative Group, says, "The 1 million Black businesses experience for me was unlike any other program I've been a part of, primarily because it was for us and it was by us. Here at Drink Champs, we are always interacting with our listeners, many being Black entrepreneurs. Shopify is one of those platforms that empowers and emboldens entrepreneurship. So chart your own path for business success with the 1 million Black Businesses Initiative and Shopify. Bring your business to Shopify with an exclusive 120-day free trial at shopify.com/BEN, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/BEN.
That's how we own it. So today we have, you know, a very special guest, a brother that I met through the struggle. You know, a few months ago, I was introduced to this brother's struggle through social media. I came across a Now What video talking about his situation, how he had been incarcerated since he was 17 for a crime that didn't involve any violence, but he was in jail for 24 years.
At that point.
At that point, he was sentenced to 70 years originally. And, you know, it really was something that really touched me, you know, so I decided to repost and somehow the brother reached out to me, you know, he got connected with me. And I took personal his struggle. And then we realized that I was actually incarcerated with him. You know, when I was in Sing Sing in 1999, he was actually on the same block as me.
He was younger than me.
Yeah, we figured that out. He told me, like, yeah, you was in Sing Sing with me, you know. So there was always, like, you know, these small degrees of separation. So, you know, I was inclined to do whatever I can for the brother. And so he was just recently released.
Yeah.
You know, after he was granted clemency, and this is a brother that I'm happy to see here on the other side of the wall, No more prison calls. You know, no more long nights of him just trying to figure out how, because this man really took serious his freedom. Man,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And he would call me daily, you know, checking up on people, sometimes bugging them. And I'm like, calm down. We got this. But, you know, his passion was what really drew me to him. So I just want to welcome home my brother Dante Infalme Mitchell. What's going on, King? How you doing?
I'm all right, brother, man. How are you?
I can't complain, man. How you feeling?
Feeling elated, excited. You know, I'm ready. Get to work, do the things that I've been doing, man. Take the same energy that got me, you know, released and, you know, to try to help uplift and empower my community.
That's a beautiful thing, man.
Dante, it's so nice to see you on the screen. You know, I've heard your story many times. I've actually, you know, as I work very closely with my son, I have watched him go through emotional struggles. And of course, Angelo Pinto, attorney Angelo Pinto, who I also work with every day. And I've watched them having conversations, trying to figure things out, making phone calls to people, you know, bringing you all, your name up in conversations with the top people that, you know, they could talk to about what was happening to you. And, you know, I know, and I also know how frustrating it was, because they would say, like, we're frustrated, he's frustrated, you know, I've not witnessed someone advocate for themselves the way that you did, and the way that you continue to advocate for yourself. So I just want to salute you and just tell you that your strength and resilience is so important, and how you help to translate that to the world is going to be what I, you know, think is God's message and the reason why you went through everything that you went through.
Right, right. Thank you so much.
So tell us, you know,
give us a synopsis, like break down, you know, you went to prison 17 years. Give us a brief synopsis of that situation, what you were sentenced to, how long you were there. Just give people a little feeling of what it is so they can understand.
All right, well, you know, at the age of 11, I ended up being taken away from my mother and placed in foster care until I was 16 years old. When I turned 16 years old, I signed out of foster care, and 10 months later, I was incarcerated. You know, I held down a job, but I was in between living situations. So I was going to different youth shelters, et cetera, trying to, you know, do the independent living thing. You know, I ended up getting caught up with the wrong crowd, introduced to a life of guns and robbery and stuff like that. And it just kind of sucked me in. So after I lost my job and I ended up being displaced from one of the shelters that I was living at, you know, I seen that, you know, doing a robbery was a quick way of getting money. So, you know, I went down that route, you know. And of course, hindsight is 2020. You look at it in retrospect, it wasn't the most wise decision, but I was a kid, you know, struggling to find himself and find his place in the world. And I made that mistake. Even though I didn't hurt, harm, or injure anyone, and I was a first time felony offender, you know, I was given an exorbitant amount of time, 35 to 70 years. And that was pretty much punishment from the judge, because I chose to exercise my constitutional right to a trial. And the reason why I did that is because, you know, there was some things that the Albany City Police Department had did in order to secure the conviction that was illegal and pretty much unjust. You know, they say Capricorns are the type of people, when they see something unjust, that, you know, they're going to fight, you know, hard for, you know, to deal with or to alleviate that injustice. So that has always been me. And because I've seen that,
the same thing.
Yeah, all right. You know, so I'm like, you know, here it is. You guys is, you know, you railroading me, but you want me to, you know, own up and take responsibility for what I did wrong. But here you guys are, y'all police department, you are police officers sworn to uphold the law, but you break the law in order to try to enforce it. It makes no sense. So even at that young, tender age, I understood what injustice was. So I decided to go to trial and try my hand for as punishment for doing that. You know, the judge basically threw the book at me, called me a plague to society, you know.
And now what was the crime?
It was a robbery and two attempted robberies and related offenses like criminal possession of a weapon, criminal use of a weapon, and grand larceny.
Mm-hmm. And so, 35 to 70 years at 17 years old was the sentence. Now, this is in New York State. So this means that you were tried as an adult?
Yes.
Which is the raise the age law. that Angelo and so many and all of us fought to change.
Exactly.
So if that, if Raise the Age had been lifted, well, no, if Raise the Age had passed as a law at that time, if that was a bill that was in place, he would not have been tried as an adult. He would have been tried as a child and gone to programs, detention centers, and, you know, what have you, and given services, right? I'm just trying to make sure that that's what we've been talking about. Or am
nah,
I wrong?
I want to correct you, because I've been following the Raise the Age law since it been passed. I know that Angelo and a few others who initially, you know, introduced it wanted to go, you know, as far as they could to
ensure
that juvenile offenders weren't treated as adults. But the bill got watered down.
It did.
And,
it
you know, did. So people, I mean, and you know, it's like, you damn if you do, you damn if you don't. So I don't fault the advocates like Angelo and others, you know, for the work that they did. You know, we are living in a very diabolical system. So they're going to look for any way to maintain their interest to ensure that they keep these prisons open. So even though the Raise the Age law has made it much easier for juvenile offenders to be treated as children, especially if you have nonviolent crimes, you automatically go to family court. But if you were charged with a violent crime, even in a situation like me, where no one was hurt, harmed, or injured, you're still gonna go to the adult court, but they got something called the youth park. But you still can get the same amount of time.
As an adult.
The difference is that, right, the judge is supposed to, you know, look into your youth at that time as a mitigating factor, but they basically left the loophole for them to still keep guys in prison. Even when the law was passed, it was being phased in. So unlike when they reformed the Rockefeller drug laws, they allow for guys, you know, to file what they call 440 motions to go back down to court to get their resentence. They didn't do the same thing for those of us who were juvenile offenders at the time that we committed our offenses so that we can get resentenced. They basically say, you know what, we're just going to sweep all of you guys under the rug, even the 17 and 18 year olds that were being sentenced around the time the law was being passed were still getting railroaded.
But wow. but to be clear, with the law that is currently in place, it would have at least changed, not necessarily changed your situation, but it could have. Is that, that's
yes,
the,
yes.
Okay, but it could have.
That's true.
Right, okay, yes, I'm just, mm-hmm. you know, we always wanna tie together the advocacy, the work that's being done on the ground with real life stories, you know what I'm saying?
Right,
and so I'm just trying to understand, because this show is about, not just about educating the masses, it's about us learning as well. Is what we're doing working? What should we be doing more of? How can Until Freedom, our organization, be better advocates? And so that's why I just wanted to know, hands on, how would Raise the Age have impacted you if it worked properly? So thanks for helping me. Listen, he's educating us.
Of course he did. Brother's a very sharp dude, man. That's why I advocated for him, speaking to him from the first day I spoke to him. I understood that he had done his research, that he had utilized his time to grow as a man, to, you know, to educate himself, and he wanted to come home and be a productive member of society. So he's definitely in tune and understands what's going on. I just think when we look at this, his case, right, and this is what I always say, the category of violence, right, has to change,
right?
You know, because they put all of the everything under the guise of a violent crime, and
for black people,
for black people,
and,
like,
and poor
and a lot
folks.
Of these things, when you look, when you say that nobody was harmed, nobody, like, there has to be different categories of violence. Okay, we understand that there was a weapon involved, but if nobody was hurt with that weapon, there should be a different category to where it doesn't not automatically just put you under this violent category with people who are actually murderers and all of these things. It has to be different dynamics. And those dynamics should be taken into consideration when they're given these sentences, when they're given, you know, the way that they categorize these trials. And that's what happened to him, and the same thing that happened with me.
Right.
You know, even though there was never any weapon found, there was actually no evidence at all, but it was classified a violent crime. So a lot of, once they classify it a violent crime, you don't get the provisions a lot of people get. You can't go take programs. Once they say they stamp this thing violent on you, they don't give you programs, they don't give you certain releases that they give everybody else. And it just pigeonholes us and locks us, and it just mainly just focuses and goes against us as black men.
Yeah. So what do you want to see happen now? Like, are you thinking of legislation that needs to be introduced you know, your mind works, it's so sharp. And I'm just wondering, I'm sure that you have come up with some concept of what you think needs to happen as the next step for not just Donte Mitchell, but for the movement.
Yeah, absolutely, man. The things that I feel need to happen with the Raise the Age Law, one, it needs to apply retroactive. Mm. And all those young men and women that have been sentenced as juvenile offenders, you know, when the law was passed, prior to the law being passed, they should be given some type of amnesty. Their cases should be looked over and, you know, they should be given an opportunity to earn their way out of prison. Another thing I feel is that those individuals who are still left behind, you know, they should be given the opportunity, you know, to have true merit time. They shouldn't have to do, if you got 10 years, you shouldn't have to do 85% of your time because you were a juvenile at the time that you committed your offense. The law should also be raised, I think. I think if you're 21 and under, you should, you know, the Raise the Age Law should apply. Another thing I believe needs to happen is that every juvenile should automatically go to family court. It should be on the prosecutor to make an application to the judge in family court to move the case to adult court if they feel that there are certain aggravating factors that require that. But to send the kids to adult courts and then let an adult court judge determine whether or not it should be sent back to family court only on the consent of the prosecutor, man, that right there is just another loophole for them to keep guys, and, you know, not just guys, but these children incarcerated and subjected to. And two more things that I think are very, very important that the law never applied or never really focused on. The first one is really providing proper rehabilitative treatment for the young offenders that are in prison. Now, I've read a few law articles and studies that make it very clear that when you send a person who is under 25 years old and put them in an adult institution, you're going to do a lot of damage to them behaviorally and cognitively. They're not going to get the same development that they would give if they were placed in a more conducive environment to their reform and rehabilitation. So you're setting them up from jump. You're going to send 18, 19, and I mentor a lot of 18, 19, 20-year-olds through my UFD organization that I created in 2008. So I have a lot of young men that are a part of that, and I see the damage that is being done to them, you know, in the environments that they're in. I always used to say to myself, man, if I could just, you know, bring some of these young men into a more conducive environment, like a facility where, you know, guys like myself who are, you know, educated and have already transformed ourselves could be role models for them, like the program that they got in Connecticut called True, you know, where they take young guys and they pair them off with older guys and they put them in a separate housing unit where that housing unit is the best unit in the facility. You know, this is that needs to happen. You know, they need to have an environment and a space for these young men and women who are in these adult facilities where they can get the proper rehabilitative treatment. And mm-hmm. the last and most important aspect I think the Raise the Age Law should have dealt with is providing more funding to prevent youth crime. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's not treat the illness when it happens. Let's try to prevent it from happening. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why I'm here back in the city of Albany. You know, already, you know, I'm getting involved. There was two young men that I just met on the street, you know, just started talking to them. You know, one kid wants to get into real estate. Another kid, he has a clothing line, you know, they're both working. They're trying to do the right thing. One's 17 years old and one is 23, you know, but there's a lot of other young men that are in my community that are getting involved in a lot of gun violence, et cetera. So, you know, we got to figure out a way to get involved in their lives now in order to prevent them from ending up going in that direction. That's going to, you know, cause them to get caught up in the criminal justice system in the first place. So, you know, my thing to the New York State legislator and also to Kathy Hochul, where the money at? To be able to provide, you know, the actual resources necessary to save our children.
Well, there is money.
It is money. And I think you said you brought up a very good point. And I think that's what it is that we try to explain to people when we say defund the police. It's not take all the money from the police. It's not shut down the police, because we understand that there is a need for police in our communities. But we need to make sure that we take some of these resources and money that's allocated to people who's just doing overtime, sitting at desks doing nothing, to give to health, you know, to give
public health,
public health insurance, public safety, health, mental health, people who know how to deal with that, violence interrupters, people such as yourself who come home and are able to connect with the community, connect with these young people who are in these situations, be able to fund your organization that you want to start, you know, to be able to fund a lot of different organizations and give it to the credible messengers in our community, because we're underfunded. Like you said, we have to get in front of the violence. We got to get in front of the negativity in our communities. And the main reason for negativity and violence in our community is poverty. That is the main.
That's a fact.
And when you look at violence all over this nation, it is in the most impoverished communities. So there's a direct correlation. There's no denying it. You don't see violence happening at the rate anywhere near what's going on in the hood in communities where they are doing above average and they are flourishing and they have money and resources. You just don't see it happen.
I agree. Right. So let's go to some personal stuff as we, you know, get ready to wind down. What did you do when you got home?
Well, besides the fact that, you know, my son and my family, Maurice Ballard, we all basically, you know,
Mr. Footwork.
Mr. Footwork. Yeah. we basically took over a diner and we all, you know, we just had a good time, man, just enjoying each other's, you know, presence and energy. And but my main priority, you know, when I came home wasn't the typical priority, I think, you know, for somebody in my position. You know, my main priority was my 11-year-old common law nephew. You know, his name is Marcelo Martinez, man. He's having a really hard time. He has ADHD. He's 11 years old. He's living with his paternal grandmother who's in her 60s. She has a bad knee and he was acting up, you know. So during the time that I was incarcerated, and I talked to him on the phone. I wasn't sure whether or not I would come home, but I told him, I said, you know, when I come home, I'm going to come get you, man. I'm going to take you places, man. We're going to work on this. I don't think that you're a bad kid. You know, you might make bad choices, but you're not a bad kid, because he used to always tell me, I'm a bad kid. It's like, nah, no, you're not. But he wasn't getting the proper, you know, positive reinforcement. So he was one of the first people that I seen what little money that I did have. I took him, you know, out to Cross Gates, which is a mall in Albany, and I bought him some Legos and just spent some time with him, just bonding with my nephew. They love those Legos, man. But it was just such a fun and fulfilling, you know, experience to be there with him. And then I ended up getting my 10-year-old cousin. She's biologically related to me. I brought them together, so I kept them for the weekend in the hotel room that Meek Mills and Jessica Jackson had booked me, because I'm having issues with finding a residence right now. But, I kept them for the weekend. We just had fun. They made s'mores and, you know, they watched TV and, you know, they was just having fun. And, you know, they enjoyed each other's company. I enjoyed their company. We took some pictures, you know, that I'm going to post later. But I enrolled them in, you know, they're the first two enrollees into a program that I established called the Dynasty Kids, which is basically a youth empowerment and youth leadership program, you know, really designed to target at-risk youth at that age. Because one of my theories is that, you know, when you have these young children at this age who come from families where their mothers or fathers have to work or they're not present, you know, you need to have other adults that are around that are, you know, that are present, that can, you know, listen to them when they want to talk about their Legos or they want to talk about their little toys. Because, you know, that's the way kids communicate. And when you show them that, you know, you care about what they care about, you know, they tend to open up to you and they're more receptive to you teaching them, you know, things like discipline and responsibility. So that was one of the first things that I did. And I had appreciated doing that with him. It's just one of the best moments, man. So now I'm taking care of some personal business. I opened up a bank account for the first time ever in my adult life. You know, I applied for, I'm going to go to college to pursue my bachelor's degree in business management and also paralegal studies. I have a job. Well, it's a fellowship with Reform Alliance. I just signed the contract with them. So I'm going to be doing that. I'll probably be starting that next week. So, you know, and of course, like I just told you, I'm about to go to a couple of schools that are designed for at-risk youth and just walk in there, you know, just say, hey, this is who I am. You know, I'm here to do this type of work. If you guys need me, you know any youth that might need a little extra attention, I'm here.
Wow.
Beautiful, man. Like you said, man, you gave your word that you was coming home, hit the ground, focus, and then you really wanted to do change, and you've been doing that every day since you've been here. I'm proud to, you know, to be a part of this reacclimation, man. Tell them, you know, you just came home from prison. You know, you don't really have money or resources. Like, this is his first adult experience as a free man. Hmm. You know, he left here as a child. He's now on his own as a free man. He doesn't have a lot of resources. You know, I know you have a GoFundMe. I know you have cash. Whatever you have, let the people know that want to, you know, invest. I hate the word donate, because donate is some charity, but invest in you because they believe in what it is that you're bringing to the table. So let them know how they can do that.
Yeah, they can go to my GoFundMe. They'll find a link in my IG bio. They can also
send IG? A cash.
My IG is Dante Mitchell Free. You know, yeah. So they can go there and they can look at the bio. The link is down there. They also, if they can, they can send an investment through Cash App at Free Dante. My name is spelled D-O-N-T-I-E. I'm also trying to get a fundraiser established on Facebook specifically for the Dynasty Kids program. So I'm just waiting for that to get approved. But yeah, man, that's anything that people can invest, especially, you know, in the programs that I want to do for the youth. It will be greatly, greatly appreciated. I'm in between residents right now. You know, I'm basically utilizing public transportation, so I hope to be able to get a vehicle so I can utilize that to do more outreach work with the youth. Because, you know, if I can get around, I can get around them. Yeah. But if I can't get around them, you know, it's harder to get around them if, you know, if I have to come from several miles away and there's a crisis over here. You know, it's like my nephew just called me earlier. You know, I had just took, again, a little bit of money that I did have. I got him a phone because he likes to be on YouTube watching his little cartoons and stuff. So I got him a phone and he need me, you know, to go over there and unlock it, you know, so, so you I need can't
a,
do it.
You need, you need a whip so you could get around, but slow and steady, yeah, you know, slow and steady wins the race. So take your time and ease into it.
Yeah,
you said Cash App is Free Dante and it's D-O-N-T-I-E, right?
That's me.
And, yep. And then your Instagram page is at Dante Mitchell Free.
Yes.
All right. So we're going to make sure to put that information on the screen,
yep.
And also for our listeners to be able to get the info and send you a few dollars because you need a couple dollars.
Thank you.
All right. Take care, Dante. Thank you so much for being with us today. And we hope you have like a real, real, real good start. I'm sure you and my son will be in touch every single day as you work through this process. So we won't leave your side, but just from me to you, I just want you to know that Black man, you are needed and we're happy to see you at home.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right, King.
Take care.
You got to get this technology. I know that phone going crazy. You'll figure it out. Yeah. Peace, brother, peace. All right, I'll hit you later. Be safe.
All right, brother P, you too.
All right.
Seeing our communities grow and thrive is something we care deeply about here at Black Tech Green Money. State Farm Insurance also cares about the growth of Black communities. They're actively investing in programs and initiatives that help provide financial literacy, give early career advice, and grow Black-owned businesses, thus leading to generational wealth, which helps protect the future of our communities. We want to build a future that we all can be proud of. State Farm understands that representation alone doesn't equate to authenticity. It also requires active sponsorship of programs like the AXO, a year-long program that recognizes and rewards high school students for their academic and cultural achievements, along with funding programs like Project Ready, a national Urban League program committed to educational achievement of Black and brown youth that has awarded over $11 million in scholarship offers to date. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities and can have a long-lasting impact. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Hey everyone, I am so excited. The Black Effect is live. This April 27th, the 2024 Black Effect Podcast Festival is headed to Atlanta's very own Pullman Yards. Last year was incredible, and this year will be even more thrilling, especially with Nissan coming back along for the ride. Nissan is returning with some empowering activations to support Black excellence in the STEAM fields. Have a podcast idea you've been eager to share with the culture? Well, Nissan is back with a Pitch Your Podcast Lounge. You'll have the chance to record your podcast idea and have it shared with a Black Effect Podcast Network team. But that's not all. Nissan is taking the stage to spotlight some of the HBCU scholars from their own Thrill of Possibility Summit, Nissan's action-packed weekend of community building, mentorship, and professional development for HBCU scholars pursuing professions in STEAM. The Black Effect Podcast Festival is the event to be at. You won't want to miss this, because no matter where life takes you, Nissan will dial up the thrill of your adventures. Visit blackeffect.com/podcastfestival for more details.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
That's how we own it.
For the past 20 years of my life, I've been able to call our next guest my big brother. We have done some incredible work together, and also just have been together personally, professionally, for many years. And one of the things that frustrates me so much, which, you know, we talk about it all the time, is when people say, well, y'all don't do anything about gun violence, and y'all don't care about what goes on in the communities. All you care about is police, police, police. And, you know, we always explain to people the distinction between the two issues, that they intersect, and there are ways to work on both. But we do have people who do incredible, like award-winning work on addressing violence in our communities. And this brother is one of those individuals. For many years, it was a trio of A.T. Mitchell, who we have with us today, Erica Ford, our sister, who's been on this program before, and me. And the three of us moved around New York City, navigating the waters to open up opportunities and resources for gun violence, specifically, you know, people who are gun violence interrupters, and changing the way that New York even deals with the issue of gun violence. And so I'm happy to have my brother A.T. Mitchell of Man Up, out of Brooklyn, but he is now an international violence interrupter trainer.
Our friend.
And of course, he is certainly our friend, and definitely your friend.
Yes, yes, man. AT, we love you, man. I'm just love mad you, that it took this long for us to get you on the show, man.
Everything happens when it's supposed to happen, man. As y'all know me, I'm a humble giant. I'm a quiet storm. I'm a team player. I've just been here just rooting you two on and cheering you on and congratulating you and just keeping, you know, the work going, like you said, Meek, the work that goes on the ground. So I'm here as a field general. I'm boots on the ground kind of dude. Like now, as you can, you know, you can say that the respect has been made across the country, if not across the world. So I'm really glad to be with y'all too right now.
So you are our change maker today. Yes. We have a segment every week. We try to make sure that we highlight people who are doing, you know, real work. And of course, we had a whole series where we talked about gun violence, and we tried to bring people on, whether it be women who've actually been impacted, you know, and some, you know, maybe they are victims of gun violence and or doing some type of work. What we found is that for women, generally, it is a woman who has been impacted that becomes an advocate and is doing the work of trying to organize for women victims specifically. So that was important. We covered, you know, of course, many of our brothers who've been shooters, who have been victims of shootings. And then, of course, people who are on the ground doing the work. And that was an important series. I think we did it for 6 weeks. Yeah, there was 6 episodes where we focused on it. And usually people call you, AT, because you are an expert on how to curb and reduce gun violence. And we know that one of our biggest campaigns is dealing with getting this country to acknowledge violence as a public health crisis and not just a criminal activity. But I think today it's important from a change maker's perspective that we learn more about you and your story, why you're doing this work. And then this episode, we focused on a young man by the name of Donte Mitchell, who you now, you know his story. He was just released from prison after being in for 24 years, could have been close to 70 years if, you know, if he was not given granted clemency. And we just heard about his process and progress in terms of returning to society. And you deal with people who are returning all the time. In fact, you are returning. You know, I didn't know that. Just so you know, after 20 years of being your friend, your sister, and loving you so much, it took my son to say to me, no, AT is good for this episode, not that we were trying to figure out which one. And he said, no, he's returned. I said, what do you mean? AT went to prison? I had no idea.
Yo, Meek, you know, it's crazy, Meek, because nobody doesn't really look at me and they are all kind of astonished and they're surprised because I never wear it on me like a billboard, like a neon sign. But all the things that you just talked about, you know, I mean, having been in prison, you know, being, a returning citizen from prison after 16 years, being, you know, the person on the inside, actually doing the work on the inside and just trickled it into the work doing, you know, when I got released and put those boots on the ground, I just hit the ground running. So I come from a lot of that, being a shooter. I mean, lived there, you know, been there, done that, haven't been shot myself. So I'm a victim of gun violence.
AT, you was shot?
I've been shot.
I don't know anything about AT.
This is the AT she don't know. See, you don't have to be privy to this information. We keep this away from you. Man. You know
that's a fact. You know, I'm not. I don't boast about it. It's not something I'm proud of.
Exactly.
But it's something that, you know, I mean, I can experience. I have experienced. I mean, I live in Brooklyn. I grew up in Brownsville in East New York, right? So I've been through wars on the street level. So respectfully, you know, I'm just never proud of it. I mean, I've been very disgusted by it. And that's why I got into this work. You know, I wanted to stop the prison, you know, pipeline. I wanted to, you know, to stop the influx of our young brothers and sisters going into prison because they were glorifying it when I went through that same experience. And I just been, like I said, I'm more of a doer. I don't like talking about it. I listen to some people as they boast about it and I chuckle because, I mean, you know, it's really not something, you know, that people can say that, you know, that they're proud about. It's something that we really want to make a difference in. So that's what I've been doing.
Yeah. So, you know what? We was in Brooklyn, you know, me and you were mediating, a truce a few months ago. And you had told, you had given me the story of how you started Man Up. About the young girl who was shot, whatever. So I want you to tell that story. That was, the young brother. So that story was really touching for me. I want you to, like, give us that story.
I mean, like, you know, like you, Mice, we've been doing the work, man. And it's just like for me back in 2003, I was still doing my part. And then I heard of a shooting in East New York of an 8-year-old little boy named Deshaun Hill, who got shot actually in the middle of a drug beef over some weed. And it broke my heart, man. I mean, I went to the crime scene. I went to the hospital where Deshaun and his family was. And I was there when they actually pronounced him dead. And I was angry, man. I was ready to relapse in my mind. I felt that it was, you know, something that really being an alleged OG that was not cool, that the children in the neighborhood were not safe, that the women were not safe. And so I just really, you know, began to start going out there, stepping to the cats on the streets, me and a couple other brothers, just G-checking them. And when we was out there doing that, we, you know, checking their temperature and you know, we realized that they responded with the same things that we responded when I was their age. And that was, you know, they had no place to go. Nobody was giving them a job or a chance at life. You know, they didn't, you know, nobody was investing in them. And I kind of had to back up off of the tough guy stuff and realize that, you know, they right. And so I had to, you know, said, you know, if I create places for you to go, things for you to do, would you in exchange give me some peace on this block? And that's how Man Up being started. Wow. We just started out just like that, man. And it morphed into something that was, you know, now it was a volunteer, you know, led organization or effort from a basement location into a multi-million dollar. You know, I have about 40, maybe 50 employees to date because of, you know, the blessings of all the work that we've been doing. So yeah, that's the beginning of Man Up Inc.
And you all have two offices.
Nah, me, your brother got 9 offices now.
Ooh. Oh, no, no. But wait a minute. Do you have 9? You have 9 sites. Right. You have 9 sites where people are working. No, I know that part. You have 9 sites where people are working. But I was just thinking about the offices where the management happens.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's 2 different locations or all 9. There's, you know, are all 9 of your offices fully staffed?
Yes.
Wow.
So, yeah, so it's fully staffed. That's a blessing that I have, like I said, to be able to provide employment for community. For these are people who come from the neighborhood, people who mostly who've been there and done that themselves. I'm blessed to be in the position to have a team of people around me like that, that now go back into their same neighborhoods that they come from and actually, you know, do the change making that we often want to see done on a daily basis.
And you have the community center.
I have a beautiful 2-story community center. It's $11.5 million. It's equipped with a college regulated size gymnasium, a multimedia center, dance studios. I mean, it's named after Prince Joshua Oviedo, who was a 6-year-old victim of violence out here in East New York. And so, whatever we do, we always try to turn the pain into purpose, right?
Yeah.
We oftentimes like to make sure that the memories of these young angels are never forgotten. So, yeah, the beautiful community center that we operate is dope.
So. I always want to ask one more question. Mm-hmm. So I don't know you. It's nice to meet you, AT. After 20 years, we're meeting for the first time today. Yeah. But it is a true testament to who you are. In fact, it doesn't surprise me at all that I'm just learning these things because I know that you are a quiet storm that does not like to talk much. You just like to do things and get things done. But I think it's also a testament to how hard we have worked. And I often don't speak of myself in that way, right? Because, you know, we have insecurities around talking about yourself. But from the day we met until now, we've done nothing but work hard and blood, sweat, and tears. I mean, we had a little turn up here and there in the midst of it all, but really it's been focused on work. And we really haven't had an opportunity to sit and talk through all of our life's changes and issues and all of that. Exactly. And you are not on social media, so you probably know more about my shit from social media than I know about yours because you're, you know, rarely on social media. So it's really a true testament to who you are. I want to just kind of go back to that time because I didn't know 16 years and you say it's nothing to be proud of. When you were in prison, did you make the decision that I've got to make these changes or did it happen once you got out?
No, definitely. It was a decision that I made when I realized that I have to, like most of us growing up in the neighborhoods, I looked actually forward to going to jail. So I did, you know, the things that I'm not proud of. I happened to also been sentenced to a crime I didn't commit. So for me, I had to go in and serve time and realize that when I went through that experience, especially going up north, as you already know, man, that wasn't something that it just reminded me of slavery. And so I said, nah, this was not a place where I wanted to be or to be a regular place for me. So the same way I worked my way into prison, I had to work my way out of prison. And so that's when I started getting busy. I started realizing that, you know, that mama didn't raise no fool. And when I knew how to read, I knew how to write, but my fellow brothers inside prison didn't. And so I just started aiding them, helping them. You know, we all counseled each other through. And eventually, you know, I went and got my GED. I went back to college while in prison. And then, you know, I started helping other brothers get their, you know, lives together, you know, and try to help them, you know, with their needs. And then they eventually opened up the doors for me. I said, if they open up these doors, I would never return. And so, it's ironic that 2021 marks 30 years ago wow. when I was released from prison in 1991. So yeah, so that's just been my walk.
Well, listen, man, you know you're a major inspiration to me, man. You somebody that I look up to, you know, that I see a lot of myself in. Like, it's not a lot of people that I consider real OGs and, you know, sure. carry themselves a certain way. And the way that you carry yourself is indicative of how I want to be seen, you know, as I mature into it. I want to still be respected amongst our youth and amongst our culture and still maintain the stature of a grown adult man and with wisdom and honor, you know. So I always salute you, brother. The way where you come from, where you continue to grow, the way you continue to motivate us younger brothers who are trying to get to where you are, it's just phenomenal, man. And it's just a testament of what it is that I say. A lot of people, they don't have faith in people who are returning citizens. They believe that all of us are doomed to failure. You're just a criminal. They label you these things. And it's people like yourself who show that that's not real. You know, it's people, Tamika didn't even know that you had come from prison.
Tamika's still trying to find out what he went to prison, you know what I'm saying? For. I'm not
ashamed, sister. I mean, I went to prison for manslaughter. You know, I was charged with murder. I went to trial, and thankfully, you know, they found me not guilty of that. And then I was unfortunately found guilty of manslaughter. So, again, yeah, it's ironic because, like you're saying, Mice, man. I mean, listen, I like my sister knows, Tamika knows. Like I'm there just to hold y'all down. You know, and make sure that everything that the work that we all are doing, the work that y'all doing on y'all level, vice versa, what we're doing on our level, is real work. It's hard work. It's not for everybody. You know, we have a lot of people who get in the way because we make it look good. You know, but at the end of the day, they don't have a clue as it relates to the hardships that come with this, the challenges, the tests that we have to always pass. But again, I'm not that brother that goes out there. I don't have to boast about it. I like to let our work speak for itself. But this is our journey. We all earned our rights in this seat. And you deserve the same accolades, Mice, because of how you hold us down on your level. I'm extremely, I'm motivated by you, brother. And I'm proud of you as well, you know, because you're being very consistent. You could have went to Hollywood and stayed, you know, on that note, but you chose to keep it, you know, your boots on the ground. So I definitely respect you highly.
Love, bro. So we ain't gonna keep you much longer, but I just want to say, man, we want to give you your flowers while you're here.
You know, I can smell it. Thank you.
That's right. It's you made it. And this ain't gonna be the last time, man. This is you know, honor to have you here. You're one of the people I call evolutionary, man. You know, the way that you've evolved and continue to grow and show that spirit of our ancestors and, you know, the brothers who came before us that have paved the way. So continue to do what you're doing.
You know. I'm gonna get in trouble because I have one and a half more question. I'm sorry.
So give the one and
because
a half.
We're talking about returning citizens on this show, and we've talked about your process of returning, but you have a lot of staff members who are also returning. Mm-hmm. And so I just wanted to hear more about that work and how in our model that we designed together, a lot of it came from Erica Ford's brain. We have to make sure we always give her that credit. But the model that had already started and that we've worked to develop within New York State and New York City particularly is to bring people home, get them home, and put them to work so that they can be a part of the healing process within our community and helping to reduce violence. So talk about why that was important to you and what does that look like for someone like you to do that work every day?
Wow, so for me, like you said, it looks very like empowering because so many brothers and sisters that are looking forward to coming home. A lot of people don't know, 99.9% of people that are released from prison, they come home with the right, you know, thing to do in mind. They mm-hmm. really want to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, the things that are awaiting them, where they go back into the neighborhoods from which they come from, the conditions haven't changed. So they are, unfortunately, they're kind of like moved back into some of their old lifestyles and resort to certain things. And that's why the recidivism rate is so high. But even just the fact that we call ourselves returning citizens today is a testament of our work. We changed the narrative, mm-hmm. changed the language. We used to be looked at as ex-cons and ex-defenders. Mm-hmm. And we, you know, worked alongside so many other greats to change that. No, we are returning citizens. Mm-hmm. When we return back into our communities, we receive our citizenship day one. And we need to understand what does that mean. And so what I love about the work that we're doing now is that we're in position to receive them to come home. They're not, you know, stigmatized or stereotyped in a way that we once looked at people coming home from prison. And we looked at as far as the value that we bring to our neighborhoods. We come from these neighborhoods. These are our communities. And so when we go back into our neighborhoods, we need to understand that our debt is still not paid. We still have to make sure that we make amends in the neighborhoods where we messed up. You know, we might have paid our debt to the AKA society, but back in Harlem and the Bronx and Brooklyn, where the crime was committed, we still got work to do. And
that's so deep, AT.
This is what we do now. Just we make sure that people come home, they get involved in just the ground, you know, the work that's happening on the ground, helping us mediate in so many of these conflicts with their influence. I mean, today, like now, people like us, you know, we have now value. You know, we have some weight in the game and some stake in the game. So now we use that to our advantage. And so I'm just really proud to be a formerly incarcerated professional, you know, and today a returning citizen with great pride.
Thank you so much, Brother A.T. Mitchell of Man Up.
Man Up, Inc.
You know, a man of my heart. I love you so much, A.T.
I love you more, yo. I appreciate you as well. I love y'all both. Y'all keep up the great work. I'm here anytime.
Thank you.
Got you, man. We got work to do. Boycott Black Murder, baby.
Yes, sir. Without question. Peace out, y'all.
Peace.
Peace, King.
Peace. Wow.
A.T., man.
He's such a legend.
He is legendary.
And people don't know.
And see, you didn't even, but the thing is, like he said, he doesn't have to glorify that because it's not something that he's proud of, you know? And I tell people that all the time, glorify in prison is not something that we're proud of. The only thing that we say about prison, real men, is that we survived it. Mm. Because a lot of people don't survive. They don't come home fully with their faculties or they don't even make it home. Mm. So when you able to go through 16 years unscathed, you ain't got no stabs, you didn't tell on nobody, you ain't done nothing foul, and your resume is still intact, your respect and credibility is still intact, and you can come back to the communities and not only just live amongst, but be able to change, be able to take guns and have enough respect to where you can stop violence and employ people and continue to do that work, man. That's a blessing. That's all it is for us, you know, who are returning citizens to want to come back and give back. Like he said, the debt is not paid just because you got out of jail. Your debt is not paid. You have, especially if you've caused harm in those communities, if you've been a part of the problem, then when you come back, you know, the rehabilitation for you is becoming part of the solution. Mm. So, you know, he's just a testament.
He said you have to really make amends with the communities that you harm.
Got to.
I thought that was the most powerful thing that I heard. But, you know, I just got to learn so much about my friend, and you know, and I'm sure that if we sat and talked, we all learned a lot about one another because life is going and moving so fast. But it's the right time and the right moment for AT and his story to be uplifted because what he has been able to create, right? And I have spent a lot of time in two of his offices, which is why I said that. But I, you know, he has expanded so much and been able to put these offices in place where there are people, where a high percentage of the individuals are people who came home.
Exactly.
And they're doing great work to reduce violence in their neighborhood. So those are the types of stories we have to tell because people want to know, what do we do? A.T. Mitchell is an example of what to do in your community.
That's right. And okay, on a lighter note, I don't get it today. Okay. You know, I was with our production team. We were just looking through some things, and I had a different I don't get it. But this is really weird. And this is somebody I like. Like, shout out to Rick Ross. Me and Rick Ross is cool. Mm-hmm. Got music together. Somebody I respect his entrepreneur's, you know, ability, his music ability. But I don't get how you got 100 cars and you just got a license.
DMX didn't have a license,
but
I've been told.
But it's still, but I'm trying to say, like, brothers, we got to do better. Like, we got to do better. At 45,
he didn't need a license.
No, you need a license because you drive. It's not like he was, if he wasn't driving, then it would make sense to me.
Oh, he drives his cars.
He drives his cars.
But he got a license.
But now at 40, and let's give him a round of applause at some point. But brothers, we got to do better. You know, so I was having this conversation with my son the other day. He's like, yo, he just got his girl a car and this and that. And I'm like, you got your license? He's like, no.
She drives him around. He don't need it.
No, you do need, as a man, there has to be a level of responsibility that we take for ourselves. We got to get our license. We got to get our, know where our social security card is. We got to get our passport. We got to get our own banking. Like, we got to establish some level of maturity, you know? And I think that is something that, you know, I've learned over time, you know, as we grow. We have to take those responsibilities early.
Yeah. You know, mama messed it up.
Yeah, because
we take care of everything.
Yeah, but it's nothing wrong with that. But
no, but I'm just saying.
You have to realize that to be a real member of society.
A grown up,
right? You got to pay some bills. You got to put a couple bills in your name to where you go and you see the transition. You got to have your license. Your passport. You gotta have all the grown up things, brothers. We doing bad.
I bet you Rick Ross bunch has of money. A passport.
Oh, of course he do. He gotta move around. But you know, let's get your license, man. Shout out to Rick Ross, man. But we gotta stop waiting to 45 to get a driver's license. When we got 100 cars, man. So shout out to that, man.
Some people, it's like you know what though? And I get the price is different, but we have 100 pairs of shoes. Mm-hmm. He got 100 cars.
That's his thing. In his category, our shoes is the same as his car. Yeah.
It is.
It is what it is.
I know I have over 100. You shouldn't even talk about 100 pairs of shoes because that's not even close to what you had.
Million.
He got 100 cars.
So with that being said, another dope episode.
Yes,
Street Politician. Shout out to Dante. Shout out to AT Mitchell.
Dante, I'm getting ready to go Cash App Dante some money right now.
Go to his page, Dante Mitchell Free. Send him some money, man. He got a long road ahead of him. After 24 years being incarcerated, he is finally free as an adult. This is his first time being free as an adult. Just imagine that. Being in jail since you were 17, spending the majority of your life in prison, 24 years of your 43 years, you was in prison.
Like, wow.
You know, it's just like, I couldn't even.
Never thought he would probably get out.
And he never thought, but he told me that, you know, 3 years ago that he came to a conclusion that he was going to fight for his freedom. And who every day from there.
We need help. I got to make sure I'm sending it to the right person.
You just go to his Instagram page. It should be up there. Mm-hmm. But he said that he never gave up. But those 3 years, the last final 3 years, he said, I need to come home. And he spoke his freedom into existence.
Yeah,
man.
No, he did.
It's manifesting your destiny, man. So shout out to him. Shout out to AT, another brother. Look, you didn't even know AT. See, the thing is about us black men, we don't look like what we've been through.
Oh, no. That's all
you know
black
what I'm
people.
Saying? We don't
that's
look
the
like
entire
we've been
black race.
Yeah, and that's what it is, man. So shout out to AT, one of my big brothers. Like, I don't call a lot of people big brothers. I don't call a lot of people for advice. I don't respect the leadership of a lot of people because a lot of people are not really fit to lead. They give these people these OG titles that have never gained them, you know. But he is one of the brothers that I feel really has earned that title. So shout out to him, man. And another dope episode. Number one podcast in the world. Number one podcast. Street Politicians, man. Make sure you tune in. Send us your thoughts. Tell us you love us. Tell us you hate us.
Don't you got tell any us topic. You hate
tell, us. Hey, you can hate me, man.
Yeah, they might you know, be able to hate you, but they don't got to tell
you. You can tell me. Listen, I want to know why, because I be wanting to know why. Tell me why. Because sometimes it ain't all, you know, bad reasons that you hate me. You might really have a legitimate, I ain't heard one yet, but you might actually have a legitimate reason to hate me. So let us know if you hate us. Give us some topics you want to hear about. Send some questions.
Crazy.
We here, man. And we ain't going to always be right. Tamika's not going to always be wrong, but most of the time she will be because she disagrees with me, you know. So she's going to be wrong most of the time. But we will both always, and I mean always, always, always be authentic.
Peace, y'all.
Yeah. That's how we own it. That's how we own it. Listen to Street Politicians on the Black Effect Network on iHeartRadio.
And catch us every single Wednesday for the video version of Street Politicians on iWomen.tv.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream.
Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work. In traffic, so slow.
Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.